You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
Hello, sweaters, snotterers and teary types. And my darling Wendell, I have so much stress on my plate today that I'm focusing solely on the takeaway we're having for tea tonight. Problem is, Wend, what shall I choose? It's my turn.
I always go Thai,
given
the option. Well, there's a pub over the road that serves the best Thai food.
But what do the kids have when you order Thai?
Fish fingers.
Oh, you're right. So we're not ordering for them.
No. Takeaway is far too sophisticated for my children's palates. It's not beige.
So mine will have a shit fit, which is a technical parenting term, if they're not included. So it's going to have to be something where there's a non... Oh, God, I hate pizza.
Duck. Crispy duck.
Yes.
Yeah, go for crispy duck. That's the best.
Okay, right, fine. Now, shall we find out what our new guest is having for tea tonight? Because it matters. Now, I'll give you some clues as to who it is. She's beloved by parents for her wit and her art. Not often you can say that about someone. She has her own online shop. Again, not many people have that. She has a new book coming out. And quite frankly, she's unique and beloved to me for cutting through to a place of truth like no other. Wendy, it makes it sound like I love her more than you, don't I? Welcome, Katie Kirby, a.k.a. Hurrah for Gin. Hurrah for
Hello.
You.
Hello. Glad to be
How
here.
How are you today? You all right?
I'm good today. Yeah, busy as usual. But yeah, glad it's Friday. I love a Friday.
Now, we've met before, haven't we? We met at a very posh dinner. It feels like 800 years ago because obviously there haven't been many posh dinners going down recently. It was nice, wasn't it?
It was lovely. I can't remember what I had though, but I do remember it tasting very nice. And I do remember there being quite a lot of wine as well.
Yeah, I remember that we had cocktails. The food is a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
I want to know, have there been any sweaty, snotty or teary moments in your house today, Katie?
Well, the kids are finally back at school, so
I know.
Oh my God, it's so good. And
for those listening, we're at the end of week one. We're recording this at the end of the first week back.
Da, da, da. I think it's gone really fast. Do you, Katie?
It has gone really fast. And what has shocked me is how short the school day is as well.
Yes.
I think it would feel longer.
On Monday at 5 to 3, I was merrily working away and suddenly I was like, oh my God, I've forgotten to get them. And I was so out of the loop. And like you say, it felt so just middle of the afternoon, not end of day, that I'd completely forgotten to go and get them.
It's pretty much after lunch, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, how quickly the day goes when they're not here versus when they are.
Yeah, it drags a bit, doesn't it?
Any teary moments, Katie? Any snot?
We don't have any snot or tears. We've had some shouting. My son, I made him take his socks off last night when he wanted to sleep in them. And then this morning he refused to put his socks on because he said I took them off and he preferred to sleep in them and wear the same ones he was wearing to school. So because
How
I made
charming.
Him change his socks, we had a bit of a standoff about that. And we negotiated and I agreed to put on one sock if he put on the other one. So... yeah.
The art of compromise right there.
Exactly.
How old are your kids now?
They're 10 and 8. Yeah, so that's my 8-year-old still acting like a toddler.
Don't they all?
I've been hoping it gets better, but it doesn't really seem to.
It's those little battles like that that you have every single day that just kind of like keep on going. So how was your lockdown, Katie? Thank you for helping us get through ours. Sometimes it felt like you genuinely had some sort of like, I don't know, connection into the psyche of parents across the UK, because I'd be feeling something and then up would pop a meme on Instagram that just summed it up perfectly.
It's been such a tough time for everybody, hasn't it? And, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about those things and analysing what people are feeling and talking to people about how they're feeling. And I think that there just seemed to be more moments where I had something that I wanted to say, like that it, at time that really seemed to be affecting everybody. So, you know, I did a few cartoons and things on various subjects and people seemed to relate to them quite a lot. But I think that's the thing. We were all on the same boat, weren't we? We were all kind of going through the same struggles and the same anxieties and frustrations. So
One of the things I've been most surprised about is that the government haven't met your demand for teachers to get a £1 million pay rise.
I know. They really need to pull their finger out, don't they?
They really do.
I mean, it should be at least a million.
At least a million, if not two. I was hoping you might have a bit of a Marcus Rashford moment and there'd be some huge turn.
I think I asked for a pet unicorn for them as well or something. So hopefully they'll get that too.
Hopefully. There's a unicorn farm being set up as we speak.
Approximately how many times did you find yourself hiding in the cupboard under the stairs with a gin and tonic?
Oh, it's my cupboard under the stairs is just absolutely rammed full at the minute. So you can't get in there, unfortunately. It's full of like paint as well, because I bought loads of like nice Pharaoh and Boar paint at the start of lockdown, like everybody else, planning to like transform the house and make it all beautiful and lovely. And it's still there. So.
And there it remains.
Yes, there it will stay forevermore.
Now, as I sit, your gift is kind of celebrating the imperfections of parenting, which you obviously meant to execute perfectly, but let's be honest, none of us ever do. But it doesn't come without criticism. I remember once the Mail did an infuriating piece called Why Are So Many Women Boasting, you know, the Slummy Mummies piece where they said, oh, why yes, are these women yes. boasting? And you were heavily referenced in that article. And actually, we've interviewed Steph from Don't Buy Her Flowers, who was mentioned in it as well. So what do you say to those who reckon we shouldn't swear or drink gin or have negative thoughts about our kids now and again? What's your retort?
Bah humbug. Yes. No, I think, yeah, I do say that. But the thing is, I think that when people complain about it, they're not really looking at the bigger picture. And I think that if you're, times when I've been really struggling, what's helped me is to understand that other people have been going through it too. And that's part of the reason why I started my blog in the first place, is because I couldn't really find people who had the same experience as me talking about the realities of, you know, being a mum that wasn't all glossy and lovely and happy, and, you know, people running through lavender fields throwing their children in the air. And so I felt really alone. And then I think sharing it and laughing about it, it makes it normal, and then it makes people feel less alone. So I think that, you know, by saying don't complain, you know, don't talk about this, don't talk about that, that it's actually can be quite damaging to people. So you know, I think it's really important, and I hope that, I think most people understand that, and most of my followers understand that, but you obviously always get some people who don't understand the humor or don't think you should ever, you know, talk about having children in a not a negative way, but, you know, talk about, because it is hard, isn't it? And it's okay to find it hard. And I think by saying that we find it hard, it becomes less hard.
I couldn't agree with you more. I honestly think if it wasn't for the jokes, how many of us would get through this? How many of us would get through life, let alone parenthood? I mean, I know you've shared before that you haven't had the easiest time in the past. You lost a pregnancy very traumatically before you had your eldest son, and you suffered some anxiety after his birth. Mm-hmm. Humour isn't a nice to have, it's a vital, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think that perhaps, you know, those kind of experiences impacted it too, if you've like struggled to have children or been through a loss beforehand, some people might say, oh, you know, you should feel even luckier than most, and so you'd never complain about it. But I think that that's the kind of pressure that I put on myself, was that once I finally had my son in my arms, I just was like, I should feel so lucky, I should feel so grateful, you know, I've got here. Some people don't get here, some people can't have kids, and that pressure that I put myself under made it 10 times worse. Whereas, you know, as I came to realize, it's okay to admit that it is really hard sometimes. Yeah, and I think that sharing that is really important.
Absolutely.
Now, Katie, we know you love a gin. You've named your entire brand around your favourite drink. Tell us about your favourite gin.
I have a few, but it's, I think people really expect me to be a massive gin connoisseur, whereas I'm actually, yeah, I know people do, but I'm not too much. I'm quite happy drinking any old gin, to be honest. Like I mean, Aldi gin's really good if you just want a cheap basic one. And, that's an award-winning one, I think. But I like any of them. If I'm going to buy a fancier one, I do like the kind of flavoured one. So I like a Hendrix, because that's the cucumbery flavoured one. I like one called Professor Ampleforth's Bathtub Gin. That's really nice. That's got
a love
like,
bathtub. You
know, yeah, it's got like an orangey flavour to it. So often I I sort of focus on the kind of flavoured ones if I'm going to spend a bit more money. But I hear as well people saying that often it's not really the gin, it's the tonic. So you want to spend money on getting a nice expensive tonic because that really brings a lot of the flavour to the gin as well. So, and I like getting those little, you know, the miniature cans.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I have one of those. Yeah, they're good though, aren't they? Because if you have the big bottle of tonic, often you have, you know, have a bit and then you leave it. Yeah. Exactly, you leave it in the fridge and then it's all flat. And then if you have just the little miniature can, that's enough for your gin and that is just perfectly fizzy. So that's my top tip.
See, I like a little ready-mixed gin in a tin.
Oh, yes, they're good.
Oh, that's quite good for a train journey. Good for a train journey.
Well, it reminds me of my favourite thing ever. You know, in Fleabag, when he says, oh, do you want a gin? I've got cans from M&S and I love him so much. So I drink gin and tin in honour of Andrew Scott, should he be listening.
That's hilarious. The other thing I was going to ask about gin, hurrah for gin, is why has no one come to you and said, we think you should launch a gin? Or have they?
I think that maybe a couple of people have suggested that actually. And I think at the time I've just been really busy and I haven't replied. So I don't know really, I suppose, because sometimes I'm a bit nervous about doing something just for the sake of it, that people might be going, oh, that's just, you know, selling out or whatever. And I don't really know too much about it. So is it just me just stamping my name on something? But I wouldn't mind actually, maybe. So, you know, if you're a gin maker.
Invite us to your launch party when it does happen. Yeah. We will
definitely
come. It would
be pretty
cool,
wouldn't it? Yeah. Okay. I have to do that.
I've noticed, and I've admired you for a long time about this, you're actually quite serious about the thing. Like, you don't take endorsements and plug lots of stuff on your social media accounts. And I've really admired you for that, because there aren't many people actually who have a social media led business who don't succumb to the charms of a new kitchen floor or a bath.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. Is it hard to resist the temptation? Like, what's that all about?
Yeah, it has been hard actually sometimes when you get offered some plug. But I don't get offered that much stuff, to be honest, anymore, because I think it's quite clear that I don't do it. But I have in the past, and I think you can make some really good money, you know, with ads and stuff and get some good freebies. But the thing is, everyone needs to monetize what they do in some way. So, but for me, I feel like if I did ads as well as selling, you know, I have my merchandise on my books, it would just become too much. And I feel like it really just doesn't fit in with what I do, because as well, I illustrate stuff and I'm not all about the lifestyle. It would be really quite difficult for me to integrate that in a way that looked quite authentic, I think. So I just think, you know, you can't sell everything. And I'm, you know, I'm asking people to perhaps support me by buying my books,
cards
or whatever it is. And, you know, people don't want to be sold to, really, do they? They don't like it. So you can't do too much.
But I think if someone were to look at your Instagram feed, you might be known as someone who sees the lighter side of parenting in your illustrations. But actually, a huge amount of what you do is really quite serious. You tackle head on.
Yes.
How, like, you did one a couple of weeks ago about saying, FYI, you were a shite teacher, mummy. And then the other one says, well, FYA, you were a shite student. And so there is that funny thing. And I think about five of my friends shared that with me because it was so true. But then also, you did loads of stuff in lockdown about us all saying something's got to give and, you know, the kind of mental health side of things. And I wonder if, what do you see yourself as more? Do you see yourself as calling out that side of things or as someone who's comedic?
I don't know. And I do think I do a mix. So it really depends on my mood. Like, sometimes I feel like I want to draw a funny cartoon, and then often the ones that feel like they're coming from a deeper place, that's me, and that's what I'm going through at that minute. And that, you know, when it was the something has got to give, that was, you know, there's been points in the last, particularly this period of lockdown, the last, you know, couple of months, I've been just felt like I'm not able to cope at all. Like, I'm almost like I'm really on the verge of losing my mind. And yes, there's too much to do, you know, the kid, I just couldn't do everything. I couldn't cope with my workload and having the kids and all the anxiety with lockdown, and, you know, all of that is just too much. And I think that often when I do a post like that, that is just, you know, this is how I'm feeling. And perhaps because I've noticed that that's something that when I talk to my friends or when I talk to people, that they've been going through a similar time, and it And so I wanted to reach out and say, look, this is how I'm feeling. I get it. Mm. And I think a lot of other people are feeling the same. And that's what always helps. And it helps me. And it helps me when I post. So when I post, it's not just help other people. I post, then everyone comments going, oh, my God. And I read all the comments and I think, thank God. It isn't just me too. So it works both ways.
Do you think you've started a bit of a trend for what you do? Because I see kind of almost copycat things sometimes appearing on Instagram, for instance. A, have you noticed it? And B, do you see it as flattering or was it a bit annoying?
Do you know what? I, to be honest, I don't really notice it. And I think that's a little bit because one of my struggles with, you know, and how I try and look after my mental health a bit is by not looking too much on social yes. media, or particularly not looking too much at all of what everyone else is doing in my field, because I don't like getting sucked into that competitive way of thinking and analysing, like, oh, you know, how many likes did this get? Oh, that person's doing a lot better than me. And I think it's really
well,
easy
no
to go down
that. Well,
there's
no end to it, is there? Because no. There's always going to be someone doing a bit better than you. There's always going to be someone doing a bit worse.
There's always someone doing something better. Yeah, exactly.
You're never going to get to the end.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's quite healthy to try and take a step back and give it a bit of balance, really. But so I don't notice too much. And then obviously, like, as my kids have got older as well, I don't talk, you know, I talk less about parenting and more about life in general, which includes the kids, but it isn't like solely focused on parenting. So I don't, and I don't follow a lot of, or I don't, you know, look up a lot of other parenting blogs or content because it's not really my mindset or what I want to read. So yeah, I kind of ignore it. What's really annoying though is when people blatantly rip me off and take my cartoons and either just put their own tags on them, like pretending that they've drawn them, or
that's
the worst.
Dreadful.
I know, it's really annoying. And I've given up like almost trying to take people down who do it because it's just too time consuming. But the worst is when people actually then take the pictures and put them on cards, or, you know, actually try and sell them as their own. That's just lazy.
That's just bloody cheeky.
Well, it's stealing.
Yeah,
it's stealing.
It is stealing. Yeah, it is stealing. And because, you know, it's happened to some of the things I've been shared the most amount of times. There's a popular Christmas one where it's like feeling Christmassy and then feeling confused.
Oh, that one about
cheese. Yeah, it's everywhere. And, you know, I've given up. There's no point in me even sharing these things anymore because they've just become, you know, sort of so mainstream that they're not mine anymore. They're just the sort of internet. So they lose all value. As soon as you start sharing stuff without crediting people, it loses its value completely to the person who originally created it. So, but that's just the nature of the internet. So it doesn't make me angry. It's just a bit annoying. But what makes me angry is when people actually pretend to have made it, redraw it, or just, you know, yeah, rip it off in their own way, or yeah, try and monetize it themselves. That's not a mistake. That's, you know, there's an intent to try and benefit from it, which isn't very fair.
No, it's not fair at all.
It's got to be pretty flattering once you get over the fact you're really pissed off with them, that you're so, some of your cartoons are so prolific that I think I could do a pop survey of all of my friends and every single one of them would have seen that Christmas one where you say confused and full of cheese and then fat. And I think,
yeah,
do you find that a little bit, is that quite weird that so many people have, you're kind of part of public psyche, or certainly mum's and dad's psyche.
Yeah,
it is weird. And I don't really tend to think about it that much. I just almost sort of disassociate a little bit from it. But I think also, like, I mean, I'm quite a private person, so I don't really covet the attention. And part of the reason, you know, I started doing these cartoons, and then I used to do a lot more pictures of myself and my general life and pictures of the kids. And I really took a step as it started growing. I took a step back from that. And now it's really, I don't put much of myself on there. I don't put my face on there very often at all. I don't put the kids on ever. And I feel like that's my kind of protection against that. And I don't want to give up my, you know, all the details of our everyday life anymore, because I do find it a bit weird. And I think the turning point with that came when the kids got recognised a couple of times when we were out and about. And then I felt, it just felt a bit weird. Like, there was nothing dodgy about it, but I felt weird that people were looking at them knowing who they were, and the kids didn't hadn't, you know, weren't aware of why they might be looked at, or, you know, how people might know them. And it just didn't, everyone has their own take on it and it's fine. I think you, as a parent, you make your own decision. But for me, it just felt, as it grew, it felt nice to be able to hide behind the pictures a little bit. And perhaps I'm lucky that I can do that, because I fell into doing the pictures, and that became my main thing anyway. So it was quite easy for me to just carry on down that route and stop doing so much about my everyday life.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. How did it ever start? Did you just sit down one day and be like, and find yourself drawing this picture and writing this funny caption? Or was there a plan? Like, how did Hurrah for Gin get born?
Yeah, well, the stick figures came later, actually, but Hurrah for Gin got born when I just literally on a whim, I was just sat on their sofa, and I've always liked writing, and I had sort of done a couple of other blogs before in my life that never went anywhere. But I with all the parenting and how I struggled and I couldn't find anything out there at the time that was of a similar kind of nature, I just said, oh, to my husband, I'm going to start a blog and I'm going to talk about like the realities of parenting. And I just thought, I'm going to call it Hurrah for Gin because of the connection to, you know, mother's ruin So it was as simple as that. I didn't give it a lot of thought. I just started doing it, and then it's grown to here. And then with the cartoons, that was, I don't know how many, if that was like a year or two later, I'm not sure specifically when it was, but I remember the first blog that I did, and it was a story that I wrote about my son was, he had a fake plastic saw, and he was sort of building a house, and he'd come up to me and he got his little fake plastic saw, and he started sawing at my arm, I think it was. And he goes, oh, I'm going to chop you up. I'm going to chop you up into bits and build a house out of you. And I was like, oh, that's very nice. And it kind of, the point of it was I was saying, you know, one day motherhood will become worth it when they come up to you and they go, oh, I'm going to chop you up into bits and build a house out of you. And I didn't have a picture of that, obviously. So I just drew a picture of him. I think it was of him sawing me up or something, and it was just a little stick figure, you know, black and white picture. And I did that, and then I just liked doing it, and I did a couple more, and it quickly became apparent that the humour that I could get across in these pictures people really liked, and I could just have a lot of fun creatively without having to worry about finding the right picture. I could just draw stuff, and I really enjoyed it, and people seemed to really enjoy it, and then it just went from there, and then suddenly everything was stick pictures.
And it was art and comedy your background? Was that your job before?
No, I used to work in advertising, like digital advertising in London agencies for many years. So I didn't have a background in that, but I've always been of that kind of silly sense of humour, and I've always been quite creative, and I've always loved writing. I always kept diaries when I was little, and so I've always kind of had that in me, if you like.
I love that it wasn't what you did before, because one of the things I love about when people become parents is it almost seems to like reveal some extra depth or talent that they never knew they had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's so many people who've launched businesses since becoming parents, or even just people who become more real or more funny or more just different in their personal life. It's fascinating what it does to people, isn't it?
It really is. And I think, it's the same. So many people, you know, all the school mums, they just do so many different types of jobs. And, you know, so many of them have their own businesses or work freelance and stuff. And I think, the vast majority have had a big shift in their career since they had kids. And that's really cool. But then also I wonder if it's not cool in other ways, because, you know, the flip side of that is I kind of ended up doing this mostly because I was made redundant, and then I couldn't find another job because I wasn't able to get back into what I was doing because I had kids and I couldn't, you know, it was a full-time job, and it was all up in London. And I think things have changed a bit now though, haven't they? There's much more shift to, like, you know, helping working parents and flexible working and stuff. But at the time I felt like my career had gone down the pan because I wasn't able to get back into it unless I wanted to, you know, go and work full-time up in London, which is 2 hours on the train there and back every day. So it just felt like I either had to go and do that and completely give up seeing my son or my sons when they were little, or change track. I'm glad I did, obviously.
It's kind of, I guess that's what I mean about the change when people compare. It's like, it's almost like a needs must, like your needs change. They become much more kind of visceral and real, and like, oh my God, I've got to do this new, I've got to change something in my life. And yet often that tension brings about something quite cool and amazing.
Now, Katie, what interests me is you started off doing all this, but now you are an actual real life proper author with two books to your name and one on the way. And we'll come on to the fact in a minute that I've got a bone to pick with you about this book, because my daughter got an advanced copy and I have had some seriously interesting questions over the last week since she read it. But
how old is she?
9.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Exactly. What made you decide to write a kid's book after writing two books that are firmly aimed at parents?
Well, actually, I've done three books as well, so...
I'm so terribly
that's
sorry.
All right, don't
that
worry.
That shows how crap my research is.
That's fine. I've done two parenting books, and then my last book was called Reluctant Adult, which is a bit less about parenting, it's more about life, but yeah. It does have some parenting in too. And then I felt like I'd covered off everything that I had to say, like my personal stance on life and parenting and stuff, so I felt like that was kind of done for me. And then in terms of like writing for children, that's something I've wanted to do since I was a kid myself, really. So I'm just trying to think of ways in which I can carry on doing what I like and, but, you know, branch out and move into a new area. And that was also confounded by my editor at Penguin also approached me and said, had you ever thought of writing for kids? And I was like, yes, I have. And then I think they sort of suggested, you know, maybe looking at doing something like young adult, like a teenage kind of book. And I was quite keen to do something a little bit younger, because for me, when I think about when I loved reading, well, I've always loved reading, but it was a real key part of my life when I was in that kind of 10, 11 year old age bracket, where I think it's a really difficult time for kids, because there's just so many changes. Everything's changing, you know, you're changing schools, you're changing friendship groups, your body's changing. And I just remember it being really awkward and kind of almost a bit harrowing. And then finding all these Judy Blume books in the library and reading.
Judy Blume.
I loved them. And Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret is, I suppose, kind of the one that for me was probably one of the first ones. And it was the one that really spoke to me at that period of my life, because it was literally what I was going through. And so I kind of wanted, and then I couldn't find... I couldn't find much of a modern day equivalent. Like, there was a lot of younger and a lot of older teenage stuff, but I couldn't really find many books out there that kind of did speak to that age range, though I really wanted to do something that was about that tricky period in young girls' lives. And I wanted to sort of make it funny, but also talk about all those kind of like
awkward things.
Issues and awkward things like bras and periods, but make it kind of normal and sort of make it something that girls can relate to and think, oh yeah, I'm going through that too.
Well, I think I don't want to sound too gushy over you, because it will just embarrass me as well as you.
And she has a habit of doing this, and we've told her off many times for gushing over guests.
When I like people, I like people. But I think your talent is for cutting to the truth of something and cutting through the veneer that everyone thinks you should put on everything and sort of telling it like it is. And so I think it's crucial almost that you apply that to kids in that age group, because they really need it, don't they?
Definitely. I think it's a really tricky age, and it's difficult to talk to your parents about stuff. Like, you start getting really awkward and embarrassed about things, and perhaps you just don't want to. You want to kind of read about it and talk about it with your friends and stuff, and saying, you know, you're okay, you're going to get through this, it's all very normal.
My daughter loved it. She was squirreled upstairs. She read it in like 4 days or something, and she thought it was brilliant.
That's a very good test. So when's it out, Katie?
It's out next week. It's so weird, because it's been such a long process. Like, I started, honestly, it's been about 3 years since those kind of initial conversations, and I started writing it because I've had other things, projects on and stuff. It's taken me quite a long time to do, but it's finally, and then, you know, now I'm looking at it going, oh, it's an actual book, and it's actually out next week, and it just feels really mad.
And did it take you a while to find your kid voice, or did it happen quite naturally?
I did feel nervous, but I do feel like that my sense of humour and style of writing is quite immature anyway, so I don't think it was that difficult in some ways. But I just struggled trying to think at first. I was trying to do it I think, too old. And I felt like I didn't have as much to say. And this was the age that really felt like that was the period in my life where I really remember those kind of feelings and those experiences quite clearly. And I just felt like this was the age that I really wanted to speak to. So once I had that, it was fine.
I'm always fascinated by kids' authors about the age that they tend to write for. And it usually is, like you've just said, because you feel a real affinity for that age group. Your style has always reminded me a bit of, you know, Jeff Kinney, who wrote Diary of a Wimpy Kid?
Yes.
And we've had him on the pod, actually. He's such a lovely man. I said to him, why do you write for that age group? And he was like, because a part of me is stuck that age. And like, I just know I can talk like that, like kids do at that age.
Yeah, I think that's probably is a similar thing, isn't it? And perhaps that's how I felt too. Like, I just really felt like quite connected to that age. But and I think, you know, I've got two boys, so I don't have, which is a bit annoying, because actually it'd be more helpful.
Have they read it?
To have a girl. No, because they don't care. They're just not interested whatsoever. And I've sort of when this arrived, I said, oh my gosh, it's my books. They've arrived. My son was waiting. He wanted some plastic folders for his, he's got a drawing folder, he puts drawings in, he's waiting for plastic pockets to arrive to go in that. And he was just like, oh God, it's always for you, the post. And I showed them, they're just like, oh, whatever, it's just for girls, I'm not interested. So they're, and also I don't think they believe that I'm a proper writer, because I got him a book the other day from a author who we have the same agent and the same publisher, and I gave it to him and he was like, oh, it's really good. And I said, oh, I'll tell them that you really liked it. And he was like, oh, you know them, you like know an author. And I was like, well, yeah, I do.
I am
an author. And he's like, oh, whatever. And so I think they just think I'm really rubbish, and I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know, but no, they're not interested. And well, they might be if they keep saying, why can't you write something for boys? So
when that's next, then there's your challenge. Yeah, exactly. Like, for your harshest critics.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you about a very triggering word.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Well, I don't know, but this word really annoys me, and I think it might really annoy you too, and it is the word mumpreneur.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
And I read an article once called We're Not Sodding Mumpreneurs, and I just thought it was such a brilliant article, because it was basically saying, I happen to be a mother and I happen to run my own business, or I happen to be an author, or I happen to have done something really bloody innovative, and then I get lumped into this, like, oh, but you're a mumpreneur. Does it piss you off as much as it annoys me?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like mum boss either, because that's the same sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah, I'm not a big fan, but the only way I sort of, the support I have for it is that sometimes it's just not worth getting annoyed about stuff. I mean, where it will come from is just that, like we were saying earlier, that mums do often change their careers and do something different. So I suppose it sort of spins off from that, of it being something that you've changed in, you know, your life's changed and then you've changed your track a bit. And so I suppose it comes from there. So it's probably not as meant in that kind of way, in the way that a lot of people take it, but I suppose it is. It just does feel a bit condescending, doesn't it, really, when they're saying it's just,
yeah, it does. It isn't,
you know, it's almost saying that you're not a real entrepreneur, you're a mumpreneur.
I can't even say it.
It's so really hard to say. Yeah,
mumpreneur.
I'm going to ask an easier question. So ultimately, one of the things that we ask all of our guests, and it's very deep: how do you want to be remembered, Katie Kirby?
What, when I die?
Yeah, sorry, we're bumping you off, basically.
No, or when you leave the world of comedy drawings.
Annie wrote these questions. Just caveat, not my fault.
No, what I mean is, if you move to Wales to run a chicken farm and we never hear about you again, what is it that you want us to remember you for?
Is it that cheese meme? Is it the Christmas cheese meme?
The cheese Christmas cheese meme. Maybe I'll get that put on my gravestone, the meme, and get it carved in or something. Yeah, I don't know, just the lady who draws really bad pictures or something, bad stick figures, I suppose.
Fine, that's a good answer. Now, the other big important question we always ask is, and what's for tea? You know what I'm having now, what are you having? And who's cooking, is it you or himself?
Do you know what, I'll admit something, I don't ever cook.
Tell us more.
So, yeah, my husband does all the cooking in our house. He absolutely loves it, and I don't really like it at all. So it's over the course of the time I've done less and less, until the point that I just don't really do anything. So
that's
he's
good. I'm doing less, actually. I would say my other half does most of it now. I just, I've fallen out of love with it. But do you get to put in requests?
Oh, yeah, I definitely get to put in requests. So the other weird thing is that we've both gone mostly vegan now. So, which is also something
very
on brand. I think I've been, I think I've been a bit condescending of it in the past, perhaps. But
well, gin is vegan, so that's all good.
Yeah, exactly. So that's 90% of my diet. So
clearly.
So yeah. So we'll be having. We often do a takeaway Friday, to be honest. So if we do that, we often have Thai. I love a bit of Thai. Or curry, and curry is very good for vegan, veggie stuff. So,
and do the boys follow the veganness?
Absolutely not. No, they don't. No, I couldn't even hope to encourage them to do that, because they don't eat enough as it is. So if I took meat away, I'd be really, really stuck. So no, they're full meat eaters.
So we as a family, we're trying to cut down on our meat eating for kind of environmental reasons. And then my son has been going through these fainting spells. Took him to a hospital appointment, and they were like, he needs to be eating a lot more red meat. So had to completely revert, and are now practically like cannibals with the amount of bloody red meat that they're eating.
Giving him steak for breakfast and stuff.
Absolutely. Every meal. I'm crowbarring like minced beef into meals that should never have been near a cow.
So not very vegan then?
No.
Not very vegan. You went on the Scummy Mummies podcast, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you have to wear the cat suit?
I did have to wear my cat suit.
You did not.
I still got
it.
Did
you really? Wow.
Yeah, I did. I've got like a electric blue one. I've still got it in one of my drawers somewhere.
I want
one. There's a picture of me somewhere on their channel, I think.
Do you wear it to do the hoovering now?
I might do tonight, actually. I'd forgotten about it, but maybe I'll put it on tonight and do the hoovering.
Lucky Mr. Hurrah for Jim.
Yeah.
I was going to say. Gosh.
Right, Annie, last question. Here we go.
Right, it's the big one. We ask this of all our guests, so please don't feel victimised, okay?
Okay.
Imagine you're tucking me and Wendy into bed, right? Imagine we're your third and fourth children. Bit creepy, I know.
Yeah.
What would you sing to us? And please, will you sing it for us to help us get to sleep? Because we know every family has a lullaby that they pull out of the bag when the kids are finding it hard to drop off.
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't know. What would I sing? What I do with my kids is I do, they call it a teddy story. So it's not a song. Well, sometimes it's a song, but that basically make me get their teddies and act out like some really random story
from
my head.
You're such a good mum.
Well, yeah, I mean, they often end up in some sort of like ultimate fighting championship where all the teddies are like drop kicks.
That sounds more like it, yeah.
So I'm not sure if it'll really help you get to sleep, but that's what I often do with my kids. And then, apart from that, I'd probably sing something. I like a bit of pop music, to be honest. So I like a bit of The Weeknd, Dua Lipa, Justin Bieber, or something like that. Would that work?
I think my kids would
Whatever
be scarred for life if I tried to sing that. Come on, hit us up, Katie. Go for it.
What with?
Whichever one you fancy.
Is it too late now to say sorry? Because I'm missing more than just your body, baby. I can't believe you just made me do that.
I love it.
Look, we make everybody do it. Ronan Keating refused.
Oh, God.
I think you win the prize for bringing the most funkiness to the whole thing. Because we've had Edelweiss and we've even had a hymn.
Oh, wow.
So you took it sharply in the other direction.
And Bryony Gorton just sang us a song that, if I start singing it, that's it. It's in my head for the rest of the day.
No, I know.
What was it, though?
Cuddles with E.D. Cuddles with E.D.
Cuddles with E.D. There's no better way to spend the day.
Oh, I feel like I should have had something nicer now.
No,
than just dropped
I think that's fab.
Kicking teddies.
Right, on that joyous note, thank you so much. You've been an amazing guest, Katie, and thank you for getting us all through lockdown.
It's really, really fun.
We couldn't have done it without you.
Nice to talk to actual people.
I know.
It is, isn't it?
Right, see you next time, sweat, snot and teary lot.
Bye-bye.